Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carrie Adloyd. How do we grieve for someone? How does it change and evolve as we get older? My dad died when I was 15, and it took me many, many years to be able to express what I had gone through. So I decided to create Griefcast, a chance to talk, share and laugh about the weirdness of grief and death. But with comedians, so it's not that depressing, I promise. Each time I talk to a different comedian about their own personal experience of grief, as we remember someone that they have lost along the way. Whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club, this is a chance to talk about the peculiar human process of death. Welcome to Griefcast. Welcome to a Griefcast bonus episode. We recorded a live show this week at Bart's Pathology Museum, and we had such a... That's my daughter in the background. Okay, shh. Can we shush? I've got to do an introduction. Is that right? I'll be quick. We had such a brilliant and interesting chat with Dolly, Ahir and Grania, and in the audience who had some amazing questions that we basically just didn't have time to squeeze it all in into one episode. So here is an extra bonus cheery death chat. If you haven't listened to the live episode yet, you might want to listen to that first, as there's just some really great callbacks, guys. Don't want you to miss. Also, just while I have you here, I just want to say a huge thank you to you for listening to the show. It means so much. Genuinely thank you, especially for all the tweets and Instagram comments and emails. If you want to get in touch, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast, and you can email me thegriefcast@gmail.com. So here I am chatting all things death and grief with Dolly Alderton, Ahir Shah, Grania Maguire and the fantastic Griefcast audience. It starts with me repeating a question I was asked, just so that makes sense. Okay, I'm coming. I finished.
So the question is, if you didn't hear, I'll say again. So it's about being death positive, that in English culture and Western culture, there is a tradition of like kind of getting rid of the body quite quickly, calling the funeral director, putting it away. Whereas what we're talking about, having the body around, would that be helpful and help the process? I think massively, but the problem is it depends on how you die. Obviously, if something suspicious has happened or something like something awful, then sometimes your body has to be taken away.
If you've been squashed.
If you've been squashed.
If you've got your head stuck in a cinema seat.
If you've got your head stuck in a cinema seat. If you've got, you don't want the cinema seat in the room with you. But yeah, I was trying to remember what happened to my dad. I think because he died in the hospital, so he didn't ever come home. The body never came home. Because it was like, I think we were all a bit like, well, it seems a bit much of a journey. Like he could just go from hospital to morgue to undertakers. It seemed a bit unfair to be like, oh, you've got to pop home as well. And I think we were all a bit like, well, I don't know if I want my dad in the living room. But I think if I'd grown up in a culture where that happened, it wouldn't have bothered me at all. It would have been fine. And I do think they talk about this a lot with children who have, like, so when I say children, I mean kind of like under 16, that it's really important for them to see the dead body. And obviously the instinct is to protect the child and say, no, you don't have to go and see your mother or father. But apparently grief therapists now, grief psychologists recommend they should see it and they should touch it, because that is part of the acceptance. And once you touch it, you can be like, oh, they've definitely died. Okay, that's now my brain can process that. And I think it's funny that you recommend that for children, but not for adults. Because I think adults as much need to, and I was with my dad when he died and I saw the dead body and I was able to sort of like touch it and be like, that's definitely dead. And if you haven't seen it, I think it can be really confusing, because if you haven't seen a dead body, little fact for you guys, it really looks so fucking different. It doesn't look like someone's asleep, because that's what we're used to. Yeah, sometimes beautiful, sometimes peaceful, sometimes just empty. My dad was a very active man, like, literally never saw him still. So the biggest thing for me when he was lying in that hospital was like, he was just still. And I remember thinking, I've never actually seen him that still, not moving and talking and gesticulating. I don't know where I get it from. So yeah, I think it would be great. What do you guys think? Any, well, Gráinne, you're a big fan of the death positive movement, right?
Big fan. So positive of death. I do think it's nice because it sort of normalizes it, and it sort of makes it feel like it's just part of life. It's not some weird thing that happens.
I think that's amazing. You saw the first dead body at 6. I think that's incredible. I think like kind of that's what it probably used to be like. Mm-mm. And now we do kind of wrap them up and clean them and hide it. So you're probably pretty cool if you saw a dead body now.
Listen, I'm so positive. I'm so comfortable with death. I die most nights. Yeah. All right, guys? On stage at comedy gigs.
Okay, you're cool with it. You think, or maybe you're not, because you were unhappy about the Irish people doing it.
Well, I don't think it necessarily has to be like the celebratory tone around it, but I think that the...
They're dead.
It's the celebrating of life, I guess, right? Like, but I certainly think that there's something in the having the people or having the body in the house and what have you. And when you touch on it, like, and you don't really, I was just remembering when you were talking about just like of how cold,
cold.
A human becomes. And considering so much of the way we organize society is to distance ourselves from the reality of our stuff as a finite animal. It can be useful, and also just to like actually excise whatever emotion needs to be excised in that situation, be that a celebration of a life. Or I remember just in this thing about my uncle who passed away a good 10 years ago, just the sound of his brother just like visceral, like it's the most visceral howl of
they sound like people sound like wounded animals when they're crying for them.
Because that's what we are. We are wounded animals when that happens, and I think it's worth remembering that and not just being like, oh, let's put this to the next stage in the market economy that has grown up to deal with this detritus of what once was a person, but let's
and it's because in
them.
In Ireland when we have a wake, it's not like it becomes like a big
Gráinne says to defend wakes. No great idea.
No, but what it becomes like a real community thing. Yeah. So it's like a big like your neighbours will come around with like sandwiches and toilet roll and tea and stuff like that. Like becomes like the community sort of like is very supportive.
I do feel like you do it right. Like it does sound like I do.
I now just really want that to be like a sitcom of like my family living next door to your family, and there's just been a death or something, and it's like you come around with toilet roll, and my parents are like, "The fuck are you doing?
You'll need this. Yeah. You'll have so many."
You guys
got to
be shitting constantly, so you.
I think toilet was an amazing, because I always say like bring food, bring biscuits to someone because they're going to have so many visitors, but they will have it, so they need toilet roll. It's very thoughtful.
It does make practical sense.
It makes a lot of practical sense.
Going in and out your house.
Yeah, definitely. Any other questions at all? Any other questions? Go on. Yeah, there's one over here. Oh, we've got a mic now. Thank you, Stephen Meyer.
Hello.
Thanks
so much. Really
enjoyed
your
TV. Oh, thank you.
I went to see Julia Samuel.
Oh, yes. Big fan of Julia Samuel.
I went to see her do a talk the other day. She was talking about how in the Victorian era, Queen Victoria kind of made death sort of fashionable.
Yeah.
Being widowed at such a young age and wearing black for the rest of her life. And Julia was saying how when the First World War hit, so to speak, and so many people were dying, every family was affected by death. It drew death back into the home. It sort of drew it back into the sort of very close-knit family. If anything, death wasn't talked about anymore. And again, with the Second World War, that sort of just, I think, in Western society, that cemented that sort of outlook on death. And I was just sort of wondering what. Do you think with things like this, that I've lost quite a few people in my life quite recently, like very close, and I struggle to talk to people about it, my friends who haven't gone through those sorts of things. And what do you think things like this podcast and people talking about death and comedians talking about it, and what do you think it would take really for sort of not death to become fashionable again, but
yeah.
Do you think there's a movement, that religion in this country, generally speaking,
is gone. Yeah. It's really interesting. So if you don't, Julia Samuels is a grief psychotherapist who wrote a book called Grief Works. If you listen to the show, you'll know she did an episode and I'm obsessed with her because I think her book is so clear about what grief actually is and how it works. It's absolutely brilliant. And I've talked about in the show before, like when my mum lost her her granny and granddad when she was a child, they went to school with black armbands and everybody knew you've lost someone. And I think that is like the saddest thing, that that doesn't exist anymore, because I would have loved a black armband. I would have moaned about it and I would have been like, but just to have that badge of like, be careful, like I'm not in a great place. I also think we need like a red one for PMT and like a blue one for like, it's a bit tight money wise, don't ask me to split the bill. It'd be great. But like, definitely to like, and I agree with you, that idea of the Victorian era was much more accepting of it. This is the problem. The problem. Here we are in this amazing building of medicine. The better medicine gets, the less people experience death. And like you said, you've only lost, you know, your friend's sister. But up until that point, in terms of family, which if you think 60 years ago, just never would have happened. And I'm sort of like a weird anomaly that I lost my dad when I was 15. And so it seems like, oh, that's odd because it doesn't happen so much. But actually, what I think is strange is medicine is getting better, so death isn't as around as much. But like this show, and when we talk about it, most people have experienced something, even if it's not, like you said, it's your friend's sister, but you were still deeply affected by it. I think there's such a culture of being afraid to be upset. That's actually what I think the problem is. It's like, I don't want to upset you. I don't want you to be upset. I don't want to be the like auger of your pain. And so we just try and not talk about things because it's all this idea of like, of being upset is the worst thing that can happen. And I think the more we can be like, it's okay to be upset. Like that's what I mean, that's all my therapy is about. It's like, it's okay to be upset. Like, it's okay to cry about it with your friends and your friends. But I think that when friends are rubbish, it's because they're like, oh, she's upset, therefore I must fix it. And trying to get past that and accept like, no, you're not going to bring them back. You will not make me feel better. I just need you to like, just be there for a second. But I just don't think people know that's all they've got to do. I think they feel they have to do something else. I think that's like, and hopefully, yes, the more we talk about it, the more we say, just be there, just hold my hand and don't say anything. But it's so hard. I mean, did you feel that with your friend when she was going through it? Did you feel like, oh God, I don't know what to say?
Yeah, I think to be honest, out of my group of friends, the first kind of tragedy within my kind of closest group happened when we were 23. And my friend Lacey, her father just dropped dead out of nowhere. And I look back now on that time, comparing it to how we all rallied around Farley when she lost her sister Florence. And it was so different because I think you learn about it. The only way you can learn about it really is on the job, I think. And actually what I realized from the mistakes that I made with Lacey is I think I really shied away from, I didn't want to upset her. Yeah. I wanted there to be like a clear cut. I wanted to moralize the death. And it's like, oh, well, at least you got a lovely father and you have great memories. Or, you know, like this kind of brusque trying to make
things. As if there's something that's positive. It's like, he's dead, it's shit.
Yeah, and trying to create some sort of shape and order that makes sense. And she was a mess and their life was a mess. And actually, something that I realised with Farley is that, like, as you said, it's okay to be upset. Like, something that I would say to her is like, this is awful. This is awful what has happened to you. Sorry, I'm getting upset talking about it. You know, no one deserves, this is so, so bad. And I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry this happened. And I think it took me a while to get there. And now I realize that's such a comforting thing that you can say to someone. Obviously, you don't want to be like a Debbie Downer. You don't want to be going on and on about it.
But no, just
that
someone,
recognition of someone
to acknowledge is shit. When someone says it to you, do you think, oh yeah, it is shit, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that it's giving you permission, isn't it? It's saying you're allowed. Definitely. This is a space where you can just be like, we don't need to find the moral of the story. We don't need to find the structure in this.
Magic ending, which makes it okay. Yeah. There isn't one.
And we look back now when we talk about, I mean, the day after Lacey's father died, we laugh about this now, but we all sat round in her conservatory and we were like all sharing stories about him in a sort of very quiet way. And Farley just out of nowhere said, oh, I just keep thinking about his lovely big hands and his lovely big smile. And Lacey just looked at her and went, he wasn't a minstrel. And it was like she just desperately wanted to like fill the space with positivity. I think it just gets better as you get older. Basically, I think you just understand how to navigate it better. I think I'll be much better equipped to support people in another 10 years' time.
I think, I don't know if it's older. I think it's just experience. It's just like the more deaths you encounter, the more... It's like buying houses or having children, like going to university. Like you just go, oh, I get it. I get it.
Well, I think that you're absolutely right on the like learning on the job. And that is the horror of it, right? Like probably the time that you need to be the best at it is going to be the time that you're the worst at it because it's the first time you're going through it.
Exactly.
It's difficult.
Yeah, and it's, you know what, it's this, like, I know I always bang about this in the podcast, it's the same as having a baby. Like, the first, like, I'm on my first baby, and the first year is just you being like, what the fuck, this is fucking impossible. And it reminds me so much of grief. It's just, you just somehow have to get through it. And I guess the only thing I can offer is, like, if you have the strength to tell your friends what to do, which is really hard and has taken me years, but if you eventually find the strength to be like, oh, by the way, this is helpful. But it that's not your job at all. But it's the only way I can think that we can somehow change it.
Thank you for listening to our first bonus episode. I'm hoping to do more live shows. If you want to find out about them, please do subscribe to the podcast or follow us on Twitter or Instagram at The Griefcast. As ever, please do rate and review if you enjoyed it. It helps other people find the show, which means I can keep making more. Music was provided by The Glow Ensemble, and the show was edited by Kate Holland with thanks to Whistledown Studios. And remember, you are not alone.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.